The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome back to the Scouted podcast. I'm your host, Joe Donoghue, and this week we're going back to our roots. I'm joined by Scouted's own Stephen Gnavis and Lou Davies, very much the brains behind the operation and our UEFA Youth League experts. I might go as far to suggest that they are the world's foremost experts on the UEFA Youth League. We've had one-to-one interviews with sporting directors, former coaches turned consultants and data scientists within the game of late. So all the more reason to revisit what Scouted does best, and that's watching, assessing and sharing knowledge on young players. Before we begin though, gents, how are we both doing? Steve, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, not too bad. It's moving into winter, so I'm freezing in here, but yeah, all good.
Yeah, all okay here. Moving into summer, but it's absolutely pissing down, so no change there in Wales.
Well, we were just saying, you know, it's the government's fault, isn't it? That they, you know, all the cloud seeding and our conspiracy theories. But no, we'll stay away from all that, and perhaps former Southampton strikers. And we'll move on to this year's UEFA Youth League, which is this week's topic, of course. A tournament won by first-time winners Olympiakos of Greece, defeating AC Milan in the final with a quite emphatic three-goal performance, all of which were scored in quick succession, and finished off with an excellent acrobatic effort. Lou, we'll start with this year's winners then. I'm coming to you as our finals weekend correspondent. What's the premise, the format, the path that Olympiakos had to take, and how did the semis and finale go in Neon in 2024?
So Olympiakos came through the domestic champions pathway, which runs concurrently with the group stage. So the group stage is made up of all the clubs that have qualified for the actual Champions League. And it's obviously their under-19 teams playing in the exact same format with the exact same mirrored groups. And then the domestic champions pathway is the winners of the under-19 competition in their respective nation. So Olympiakos, understandably, are quite dominant at that level in Greece, along with PAOK. So they qualified through that, and they came all the way from the first round of domestic champions path, beating the likes of FK Kabala from Azerbaijan, and then they went on to beat the Bayern. In, I think it was the quarterfinal, maybe the playoff round, not sure which one it was. But and then they ended up in the semi-final against Nantes, another domestic champions pathway team. I don't think anyone expected at the start of the season that one of the semi-finals would be Olympiakos against FC Nantes. But that's exactly what it was. They went on penalties again, which was a theme of their tournament. I think they did it four times in all. They beat Nantes on penalties 3-1. And then they got to the final and did what they did. I think nobody expected it. I think it's another surprise victory after AZ Alkmaar last season. I think AZ Alkmaar probably had a bit more pedigree in the youth football circles than this Olympiakos club do. But yeah, surprise, but fair play to them.
Steve, of course, the Youth League is not your average competition, because it's not just about who wins at the end of the day. And, you know, obviously it's right to say congratulations to Olympiakos, and obviously Lou's given us the lowdown there on how they weren't really expected, you know, given that they have come through the domestic champions path. But it's also about player development and giving, you know, under-19s the chance to shine and test themselves against peers and age mates from other countries, other leagues, other academy pathways. You know, some that are playing, you know, B team football, whereas, you know, some who've never faced, you know, players who aren't, you know, not the same age as them. In terms of this year's standout names from the overall tournament, you know, who did you pick out from the matches that you saw?
Well, yeah, it is all about pushing players from this level into the senior team. And I guess to start off with, there were a few out there that started the season dipping their toes into UEFA Youth League football, maybe not for the first time, but at least over the last year or two. So there were a few of them. Obviously, there's the Barca players, Pavel Bassi started playing. I think he would have played Barca's first three or four games in the UEFA Youth League. Haven't got a chance to see any of him since because obviously, as we all know, he's been killing it at senior level for Barcelona, playing in the Champions League proper and in La Liga very, very regularly. Marc Guiu as well at Barca, again, started in the youth league team, pushed his way, got some senior minutes and hasn't really seen the UEFA Youth League since. And I think that was part of what led in some way to Barcelona's elimination, maybe a little earlier in this tournament than some may have expected, even though they still had some really impressive other pieces in that team, such as Noah Darvish, who they recruited last summer. Danny Rodriguez as well, who's a nice little winger that's been quite impressive at youth level for the last couple of years. So they're probably a few of the standouts. There's Xhaka Traore at Milan with Giancarlo Simic as well, who've both moved up and played some senior football. I think Ethan Mbappe has played some senior minutes, if I'm not mistaken, or at least been on the bench quite a lot for PSG this year. Gonzalo Garcia at Real Madrid has played a few minutes. There's a few at Copenhagen as well. I think Emil Hoyland has played a few minutes. But yeah, so as you can see, if you're starting this tournament, there is a pathway for you to move up. I think Lovro's Vonarek is another one at Bayern. And there's probably another couple of candidates from the Bayern team this year that have the potential to step up. In terms of names that haven't played senior minutes, but will very, very shortly, I think it's hard to go past Francesco Camarda at Milan, who's started the UEFA Youth League season off, I think, as a still 15-year-old and just completely dominated this competition. Perhaps the most impressive player playing up front, scoring bags of goals and showing incredible athleticism for his age, considering he's playing against guys that are, you know, two, three years his senior. So he'd be probably the first one I look to. I could go through a list of like 20 names. I probably don't want to go through all of them just yet. And we'll probably touch on some names as we move through. But as there is every year, there's a great new crop of players. And I think if you've got an eye on this tournament, you've got an eye on what you're going to be seeing in the Champions League over the next, you know, two, three seasons and the first little glimpse of some proper star talent.
Yeah, you're talking about proper star talent, and Lou, I was reading your scouted notebook piece on the finals weekend, of course, you know, which kind of takes in the semis between it was Olympiacos and Nantes, as you previously mentioned, and FC Porto and AC Milan, the other semi final, sort of the heavyweights and the welterweights, I was looking at sort of the players to watch, or the players that you picked out. And one of them was a young fullback, I believe, for Nantes. Can you tell us more about him?
Yeah, so Nantes were a complete new thing for me. I hadn't watched them at all this season, so this was a good opportunity for me to see some brand new players. And I thought the best player on the pitch in that semi-final, which was quite a cagey semi-final, there wasn't much between the two teams, but I thought the best player was Nantes' Lucas Gauthier, the left back, 2006 born. Anyone that watched the under 17 World Cup will probably be familiar with Maximilian Hennig from the Germany team that ended up winning. And Gauthier reminded me a lot of him. Just that sort of flighty left back that can drive through the thirds with the ball. He has that really good change of pace over 5-10 yards, and he can extend it into carries. I thought his timing on the overlap and underlap was really good. He was hitting good spaces at good times, and as soon as he got into those areas, then he was hitting good spaces within the box with his crossing. I was quite surprised to see that he hasn't played at any sort of international level for France, because he was a standout in this game. Obviously, it's a one-game sample, and it wasn't even a full game. It was 70 minutes, because by the time he did all his work, he was pretty much exhausted by the 70th, so he came off. As I was saying, a little bit surprised that he hasn't played for France yet, because looking at the players that are ahead of him in that left-back slot that played in the Under-17 World Cup, I think Gauthier looks like a better prospect than some of those that were already there. So he's definitely one to watch. In terms of Olympiacos, I thought the best player for them was Christos Mouzakitis, another 2006er, late in his age group. I think he's the last week of December he was born, so he's quite young within his age group. But he's playing a couple of years up for Greece already, like a compact centre mid, technically talented, left footer, quite small, but he has that little bit of an edge about him, little bit of bite about him that really elevates his game. I thought his quality on the ball was pretty obvious to see. I think he has a different range of passing, that quite a few different techniques. He was the one that had all the responsibility on set pieces, which is something straight away in terms of ball striking ability. If you're on the set pieces, that means you're pretty good. So that's an indicator. I thought he was good. He missed the penalty in the penalty shootout after scoring about six of them all the way through the tournament. So that's a bit of sod's law. But yeah, I thought he was the best player for Olympiacos, just in terms of on the match day, but also in terms of how he can scale up to senior level and that ceiling that he has to go higher within the game.
Steve, obviously you guys have watched and kept a really close eye on the youth league over, you know, the last number of seasons, and have obviously had an awareness of it since its inception. You know, just looking at the previous winners, you know, before or, you know, pre-pandemic, we had two Barcelona triumphs, two Chelsea triumphs, one from Red Bull Salzburg, one from Real Madrid, and one from FC Porto. You know, historically, you know, juggernauts of European football, the ones who have the resources to pump into youth football. Whereas afterwards, you've had one victory from Benfica. Then last year, we had AZ Alkmaar from the Netherlands. And again, this year, perhaps the biggest surprise of the lot being Olympiacos. You know, what do you put that down to? You know, has there been a change? Is it, you know, is there better coaching? You know, what do you look at when you're assessing that?
I think probably one of the main things is I feel like a lot of the clubs that we expect to be winning this competition, your Bayerns, your Barcelonas, your Chelseas, they tend to throw in a lot more, especially if they've got like a reserve team. They tend to throw in much younger players than the age cap. I think that was one of the big difference makers for Porto, I think, this year, and why they made quite a deep run was they were playing quite a lot of top age players. And at this level, you know, that 1-2 years of physical development can you know, be a real difference maker in these types of games. So I'd say that's probably the main factor. Like, for example, as I just said with Barcelona, they had probably their three best players that would have been playing at this level. Then you can also throw in Lamine Yamal into this as well, because he would be eligible to play in this competition by a couple of years. You know, they're undermanned basically. So I'd say that's a big aspect of it. You know, then you got a couple of the big hitters, Chelsea not in the competition. Juventus, who have come on and been quite successful in this competition over the last couple of years, weren't in it. So, yeah. And then, you know, also I think that especially in this season, some of the teams that did make a domestic champions path run, especially Nantes and Olympiacos, had a bit of the run of the green with their results as well. Quite a lot of penalty shootouts in there. Nantes had a crazy defensive streak, if I remember correctly, and they kept like a massive bunch of clean sheets in there too. So, which is quite rare to see at this level as well, where there's generally more goals and more open defenses. So, yeah, a couple of aspects to it, but yeah, a 2-year sample size as well. Anything can happen. And also that RZ team from last year is a really special unit, and they probably could have made another run in this tournament. They were only knocked out on penalty shootouts in a really competitive game against Porto. And it was, I think they're now like 3 seasons in this competition, and the only way that they've lost has been penalty shootouts or something crazy like that. So yeah, this one is probably more of a outlier event than RZ's team last year. But well, it's nice in general just to see different teams popping up and going on a run, and it can expose you and expose these players to more scouts and more opportunities to further their senior careers once they age a couple of years and move into the next stage of their professional careers.
I think just building on Stevie's point as well, in terms of the usage of players, I think Manchester United are a pretty good example. This season, they used so many different players. The team turned over so many times within the group stage, and they just couldn't build that sort of cohesion as a team. And then you compare that with Olympiacos, who pretty much played the same 11 all the way through, had the same boys coming off the bench. I think that sort of element to it is massive in terms of knockout football, building that cohesion within a group of players. And I think it was no more obvious than with Manchester United and Olympiacos.
I'd throw in as well that, like, Bayern, for example, is one of the teams in the last few years that were mixing and matching all the time, and they'd always get knocked out early. And then this year, they actually just played a pretty settled, like, at least eight or nine guys that they had almost every single game, like Adam Aznou and Javier Fernandez, some really top-line young players. And that was a massive difference for them this year. And they, as well, another team that probably could have gone even further than they did.
Looking ahead to the next couple of seasons then, because, you know, there's, as you mentioned, with Francesco Camada and Lou as well, with, was it Charalampos Kostoulas for Olympiacos? Kostoulas in the Olympiacos winning team. There are a lot of players at UEFA Youth League level who are, you know, still playing up their age groups. Kostoulas, I think, is a 2007 born. You know, Camada as well, I think he's 2008. So, you know, you'd imagine that in the seasons to come, you will have, or they'll have the opportunity to build on these performances from the 23-24 season, and we'll see more of them. You know, I mean, I know that Kostoulas is a good example of one of those, and I'm sorry if I have just nicked him. You feel free to go into more depth, considering that you did watch him, and all I've done is read your write up, but. You know, who are the sort of the younger players or the players on the younger side of this year's tournament who you think will, you know, have a really good season next year in this competition if their teams have qualified, of course?
Yeah, Kostoulas is an interesting one because when I first watched him, I wasn't that impressed, but then I checked his age and he was the youngest on the pitch. So I was thinking, oh, bloody hell, he's like, for his age, he's doing pretty well here. But yeah, I think he's a... similar to Camarda in some way, he's an example of a boy that's grown pretty quickly. He's mature for his age. He's athletically mature, which is a big difference maker. Not the most technically talented, but in terms of just being that presence up front, that reference point, that bit of a bully ball, give the ball to me and I'll try and do something with it. I think that was pretty obvious across the semi-final and final. Camarda, again, is, as you say, a prime example, playing 3 years up, what is it, 4 years up even, not even sure what it is, but yeah, I think similar to Kostoulas, he's big for his age. He has all the elements of a modern number nine in terms of what you're looking for, that athleticism, that technical play, that link play, that finishing ability. Obviously the thing with projecting these sort of talents is if they're playing years up already, then they're on a pretty advanced pathway already, so they might just jump the UEFA League altogether. So it, obviously that depends then where the likes of Camarda are going to be placed next season and the season beyond.
Maybe I'll jump in there. We don't know where he's going to be next season because he hasn't signed a contract yet and he's out of contract in the summer, so that's another big watch.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of factors at play, and if they're playing years up already, then the likelihood is that they go on and skip the level altogether. So it's hard to project in some ways, but yeah.
I'll jump in with a couple more as well without going on too long. But Rodrigo Moura at Porto, fantastic player. It's probably, in my opinion, the best player of the tournament from top to bottom, from start to finish. Excellent, creative number 10. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Bernardo Silva, quite undersized, but you kind of can't really tell when he's on the pitch. Then outside of that, I would go to Andres Cuenca from another Barcelona defender. He's kind of more of a wide center back-ish type, but he played, there was one game he played, it was Barcelona against Porto in the group stage, where he was just flying with the ball at his feet, like through midfield, just no fear whatsoever. And he was probably, if I was going to do a comp, giving me Mickey van der Ven vibes a little bit. That kind of like leggy, quick covering ground, happy to run with the ball. And do I have any others here that I've got off the top of my head? Oliver Hoyer at FC Copenhagen as well. A nice technical number 8 who showed some really, really good signs in a pretty strong Copenhagen team.
My one would be Chido Martin Obi from Arsenal. We only saw flashes of him in this tournament. Obviously, he's caught the eye recently. He's gone a bit viral because he's scoring about 18 goals a game at under 18 level. As I said, we only saw flashes of him at this tournament. He didn't start many games. Arsenal, on the whole, disappointed. I don't think the coaching was of the standard. Just the game management aspect of it was pretty poor on the whole. But in terms of those ones that you're looking for next season, I think Chido Martinobi is probably right up there in terms of being that standout next season. If he starts games, then he could score a lot of goals. What I like about him is he's been compared to a little bit to Alexander Isak, and I can see that. He's maybe a bit more muscular, a bit more physical at his age compared to what Isak was and what Isak is now. But he's so smooth for his size. He's quite freakishly tall, and he stands out straight away on the pitch, but he has that ability to carry with the ball, to make those really sharp runs off the last line, off the back shoulder. And once he gets around the box, he can create his own shots and finish off moves pretty calm and composed. So yeah, he's one to watch. And obviously this last 6 months or last 3 months, whatever it was, where he's scoring so many goals, is just building up his momentum really nicely.
Well, was he playing youth league football this season, Obi? You know, did he make appearances in this Arsenal group?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure on the details because it was difficult to watch Arsenal, but he came off the bench against Sevilla and straight away he made a difference, like compared to what Arsenal had up front before him and after him. I think he made a difference in terms of being that reference point. Had they maybe backed him to play at this level a bit earlier in the group stage, maybe they could have got out of the group. But as I said, I think there was bigger problems with the Arsenal team than just who was starting up front. So yeah, definitely one to watch next season and beyond.
Staying with strikers then, and Steve, you were just talking about how there was a pretty strong Copenhagen team. And the top scorer, I believe he's the top scorer from this season's competition, or at least joint top, was Amin Chiaka, who was, I mean, immediately you look at his Transfermarkt profile and his height is listed at 1.91 meters. So at 18, he's done a pretty good job there. And also another good indicator, especially for young players, is when the agency is CAA Stella, which means that he's probably been picked up quite early by a very prominent agency because he's got a good future ahead of him. Again, got, I think it was 8 goals in 9 in the youth league this season. This is probably where you tell me that half of them were penalties, and I sound like a right idiot. But he's also got 10 in 17 in the under-19 league in Denmark as well. So a good record. I don't know if you managed to catch much of Copenhagen's games in this season's youth league. I know they obviously had a decent run to the quarterfinals and then were beaten on penalties by eventual semi-finalist Nantes. But, you know, looking at his Chiaka's to records, he scored, you know, 3 times against Galatasaray, scored against Bayern, scored against Man United, basically every team in the group stage, and then again in the round of 16 and again in the quarterfinals. So, you know, he's certainly got a good record there, and he's 18, March 2006. So will he be eligible to play again next season in youth league?
Yeah, he'll be in next season. Yeah, I watched a few Copenhagen games. In that game against Nantes, they were incredibly unfortunate to not get out of that game. They had a solid, I think they were 3-1 up, then copped a red card and kind of, I think that red card was like in the 30th minute. I think they were 3-1 up at the time. They just blitzed Nantes out of the gate. Chaka had a very interesting role. Him and Emil Højlund, who is the brother of Rasmus, had an interesting like two-man game going where one would drift out and kind of play as this like wide target man, and then the other one would come central and just play a more traditional striker role. And they both had really good attributes for it, because they were just, yeah, both very comfortable on the ball and creating from wide. But Chaka, yeah, he's a massive, massive lad. And Emil Højlund is built exactly the same way as Rasmus is. So yeah, they just had a good dynamic and this team flowed really, really nicely. The midfield all had really solid technicians in there. Again, it was one of those teams where it was quite an established group, more top age players than not. But yeah, he had all the nine attributes that you want as well to go with that little bit of extra ability to play with the ball more comfortably. Really good positioning between the center backs was something I'd noted down, and allowed him to get runs in behind. But then, yeah, really nice tucking into midfield, sucking up pressure, allowing guys like Højlund and Viktor Froholt to get down either of the wings and be able to play back to them. And then, yeah, huge and very, very quick and just relentless. I think him and Højlund, they just wore teams down over 90 minutes and just were able to start picking them apart in different scenarios. So, yeah, I think, you know, two guys there, two big boy number nines that they can think about how they fast track into some senior football and just how they integrate two, you know, striking prospects at once. But they're a team that generally has quite good, you know, craft with bringing strikers into the first team. So I'm sure that they'll be able to manage these two just as well.
Yeah, I was just going to add on about the that FC Copenhagen team. I really like them. I think, as Stevie says, you could see that you were a proper team that have played together for a long while. Xhaka was good. Noah Sasa, we only saw bits of him at the start of the group stage. He played his part in perhaps the game of the tournament when FCK beat Bayern München 3-2 at home. Bayern equalised in the 94th minute, and then FCK scored in the 95th minute, Sasa. And as he was celebrating the goal, he jumped up, landed awkwardly, and blew up his ACL. So he was their captain. He was one of their best players, stand-up players in terms of his pedigree. So we lost him, but still, FC Copenhagen went on and probably could have gone further than they did, as Stevie was saying. I think we'll see quite a few of this team breaking into senior football already. It's already happened with Thomas Jørgensen, one of their midfielders. He's got his own.
I was going to throw in another name as well. I did say Viktor Froholt, and he actually came in and played the second leg against Manchester City in the Champions League after Copenhagen had got whacked in the first leg. So he's another like relentless guy in midfield that he can throw around into different positions, and he brings massive energy. So this team is kind of full of these guys that look like they're on the brink of looking quite comfortable at senior level.
As I was saying, Jürgensen's already gone on loan to Fedorva. I think that's how you say it in the Superliga. He's won the player of the month for the league already. So FC Copenhagen have a really good youth system that they keep building on, and they have the pathways into senior football. And I expect to see quite a few more of this team coming through.
I tell you what, I could listen to you saying Noah Sasa's name over and over and over and over. I think I might clip it up and use it as my ringtone now. Can you say it for us one more time?
Noah Sasa. Is that what I said?
It's brilliant, isn't it? That's fantastic. So going back to the football then, and not taking the mick out of Lou's Welsh accent. We're looking at sort of, I mean, this is obviously an English language podcast, and looking at how the English teams did at this year's Youth League. You know, you had Arsenal finishing bottom of the group. Obviously, you've already mentioned that maybe the game management wasn't on point and the coaching was maybe a little bit of an issue. Manchester United using loads and loads of players in their group stage against Copenhagen, Bayern Munich and Galatasaray, and that obviously contributing to them maybe not having that rhythm. Had Newcastle as well, obviously their first foray into UEFA Youth League football. And you know, gave a reasonably decent account of themselves against you know, the group of death, which was of course Milan, Borussia Dortmund, and Paris Saint-Germain, but ultimately didn't qualify for the playoffs. So the only English team that did make it through was Manchester City, who went unbeaten in the group stage with four wins and two draws out of the six games played, and then were ultimately eliminated by Mainz at the round of 16 stage, Mainz being the German champions coming through the domestic champions path. What would you put down to, or what would you put the English team's collective performance or underperformance down to at this year's tournament? Because, you know, you look at the, you know, you're always going to get, like, you know, it feels as though you're always going to get an Italian team. You're always going to get a Spanish team in sort of the knockouts. There's always a good chance that you're going to get a French team, even if it's not PSG. But you know, since Chelsea won it back to, was it back to back? I believe it was back to back in like 15 and 16. You know, the English team's performance in youth league hasn't been up to scratch, really, has it?
I would probably start with they can't recruit like they used to before Brexit. So you've got a big talent pool out there, and you see clubs like Red Bull Salzburg is probably the prime example of this, but they're going out and, you know, there's probably three or four or five players in their starting 11 at any given moment that they've just gone and signed from somewhere else in Europe over the last couple of years. Even this season they had Neto and Daguim off the top of my head that they just brought in, I think Melberg as well. So, you know, English teams, they're competing for a very limited number of players, and the competition is fierce between, you know, especially the big six. And if you're Newcastle and you don't have that elite academy set up in the way that, you know, Manchester City or Chelsea do, you're kind of going to be left with most of the crumbs. So that would probably be above and beyond anything else the number one. And, you know, like Barcelona, they got a massive catchment within, you know, in Spain to work with, and just within Barcelona that they basically have full control over. Whereas you've got Arsenal, Chelsea, you know, all these clubs, just for example, in London, all fighting over a massive, you know, population of people, that Barcelona is basically the only thing in town. So I think, yeah, there's a couple of aspects to it. The recruiting one is definitely from Europe and from overseas is definitely the number one. But I think there's a few different things at play. I just think also the way that the, because the Premier League still has its under 18 competition and the under 23s, whereas a lot of the other European leagues have set under 19 competitions. And I do wonder sometimes, not that I'm an expert on the under 18s Premier League, but I do wonder if that staggering of ages also has a bad impact on, you know, because we talk about how the cohesion of these teams is quite important in building teams that make a deep run. And if you're having to split between, you know, guys that can play in the under 18s and guys that can play in the under 19s, whether that has any kind of throwing off effect on how you put a team together for this competition. Whereas, for example, in Italy, the Primavera is an under 19s competition, and you watch the, you know, starting 11s that Milan rolled out in that competition and then in the UEFA Youth League, and it's much more similar.
Lou, do you have anything to add on Steve's thoughts on why maybe the English teams haven't performed up to the standard of their sort of European counterparts? Because, you know, it's an interesting point that you were making there about sort of the under 18 Premier League and then the step up to sort of Premier League 2, which again used to be the under 23 Premier League. From my experience, when you do see the players from under 18s, when they come up and end up playing 21 or under 23 football, the gap is huge. Obviously it's not as big as making the step up from 21's football to senior, but you know, it's still one that they're having to traverse. And it is difficult. I do wonder whether, you know, an under 19s, maybe a middle ground would be a little bit better. But again, not for me to decide. Lou, what are your thoughts on that matter?
Yeah, I think that topic's probably a case for a standalone podcast in some ways, a bit more of an investigation, deep dive into it. But just in terms of the specific cases of this particular tournament, I think we've touched on Arsenal already. Probably disappointed. They're not a star-studded team, but I think they're better than what they showed. Manchester United again didn't really have that cohesion, mixed and matched quite a bit. I don't think the style of play that they tried to implement really suited them. I think they looked quite awkward in doing what they were trying to do, which was quite De Zerbian in some ways in terms of baiting that press and trying to play through it. I think that played against them. And they were in a pretty difficult group as well, to be fair, against Bayern and FC Copenhagen and Galatasaray. Manchester City are an interesting one, because anyone that's kept an eye on the PL2 this season has seen that they've pretty much bombed out of it. They're not even in the playoff round in the new Swiss style format. They won it 3 years on the spin, and now they were really low down the table this season. They've lost a lot of talent, obviously. They flipped them on for good prices, but as soon as you have that sort of talent drain, then you're sort of trying to bridge that gap that is difficult to bridge with younger players. They got through the group, but they weren't all that convincing in the group. I thought the team that they had last year was significantly better. They had the likes of Oscar Bob, Shea Charles, Dire Mabude, others as well that aren't on the top of my head. But their team last season was better than this season's, and they lost to Hajduk Split last season, famously. And then who's the other one? What's the other English? Oh, Newcastle United. I think that's just a classic case of the senior side growing a bit quicker than the youth team. So I think you can see it now in terms of their recruitment at youth level under Dan Ashworth previously. Obviously, he's going now, but they're starting to be a bit more aggressive in the youth market. So I think we can start to see Newcastle competing a bit better at this level. But I think just the senior side grew too quickly for the youth side, and fair play to them. They competed pretty well. They got a famous win on the last group stage game, I think it was. So fair play.
Just to jump in on that, I only saw Newcastle at the start of the group stage, and they were quite horrendously bad when I watched them. But then I kind of kept an eye on the back half of the group, and I thought, oh, you know, they're just going to be bottom and give everyone else points. And they must have flipped something around, or the players just started playing a bit better. I think I did see a game against Dortmund, and it may have been 1-1, if I remember correctly. They were much, much better. And then to jump on Man City, I think the big difference is their best players were like kind of uniformly players that had like played at the under-17 World Cup. They're, you know, playing up a couple of years, and like they're super well drilled, and they play exactly like you expect a Manchester City team to play. But they just seem to struggle to, you know, break down teams, and they're really, really reliant on their wingers, especially Joel and Dala. And we saw him at the under-17 World Cup, you know, just go crazy. But, you know, putting that reliance on kind of isolation 1v1 wide play. And it's kind of similar to what they do at the senior team. It's just that they've got incredible players at senior level that can do it more consistently. But I think there is some talent in the group. Yes, a few guys. So Soho in midfield, I enjoyed the game that I saw him play against Leipzig. Thomas Galvez as well. I think he has played senior caps for Finland, and he is at left back, and I like the bits and pieces of what I saw of him as well. But I think this is probably a group that will kind of stay fairly intact for next season as well. So it'll be interesting with another year under a bunch of these guys' belts, how they'll fare next season.
Okay then, so we move on to our favourites section of the UEFA Youth League 23-24 roundup. Lou, going to come to you first. Favourite player, favourite match, it can be whatever you want it to be. Do you have a few, you know, they don't even have to be standouts. They can just be for any particular reason that these individuals or teams or games were your favourites. Take it away.
My favourite player was Javier Fernandez from FC Bayern München. Spanish number 8 midfielder, but he could do pretty much everything that you want from a midfielder. He's big for his age. He's got that drive within his game already. He's physical. He's got that shithouse edge, which came back to bite him against FC Copenhagen. But I think it's just nice to see in players at this level. I think in terms of what you want from a midfielder, he can do pretty much everything. He's that sort of classic Michael Ballack style. Do whatever you need to do in a game. He can build play from deeper areas. He can carry the ball through the thirds. He can crash the box from the edge. He can break up play. He can spread it out to the opposite wing. He can do everything. And I think he can pretty much play senior minutes right now. So in terms of the next step, I'm really, really interested to see what happens this summer. He's already been training up with the Bayern first team under Thomas Tuchel, same as a couple more from this group, including Adam Aznu, who Stevie might touch on. But really interested, really excited just to see what he can be in future in the next year or two. I think he can. He's on that sort of pathway, that accelerated pathway, and I can see him going playing high up pretty quickly.
Steve, coming to you for your favourites section.
Yeah, I think Lou read my mind on the Adam Asnew call. I think I wrote about him like two or three. I normally don't like to write about the same players every single time when we're doing these tournaments, but sometimes you have to make exceptions. And he was so, so good in some of their group stage games that I just couldn't help myself, and I had to keep going, wow, this guy can do some absolutely ridiculous things from left back. And in an age where those dynamic fullback talents can be such a massive life changer for a team, I think he's a talent that just has to be looked at very, very closely over the next 12 months or so. He's definitely a little bit undersized, but what this guy can do with the ball in terms of the impact he can have in the final third from deep in multiple ways as a creator, as a dribbler, he is going to be a really, really fun one to keep an eye on. I was going to chuck a couple more in there. Honorable mentions. Filippo Mane from Borussia Dortmund, Italian defender, has one of the most graceful left foot long passes you'll see. And again, we've seen the kind of impact someone like Pau Kubasi has had at Barcelona. And I think the ball playing ability with Mane can hit a similar level. And then I'll throw in one more that I had on my mind. I think I've forgotten. Oh, no, here it is. Manuel Angel from Real Madrid, who we touched on quite a bit over the last 12 months, first in the under-19 Euros and now into this UEFA Youth League. He's a bit of an older one in what was a fairly old, by UEFA Youth League standards, Real Madrid team. But just the complete package in terms of technical number eight that can just control a game, speed up a game, and just do really whatever you need from that kind of player. So, I'll go with those three. But, yeah, Adam Asnew, remember that name, because he has the potential, I think, to change many, many lives over the next 5-10 years or so.
I've got one more quickly. Juan Martin from Real Sociedad. He was the partner of Pau Kubarsi at an underage level for Spain in the Euros and the World Cup. He only played twice in this competition, the first and last group stage game, because the rest of the time he was either with Spain at the under-17 World Cup or the first team in the actual Champions League. He's quite different to what you'd expect from a typical Spanish centre-back in that he's absolutely massive. He's a proper monster in the air. He just wins everything. But then he also has that ability, that typical Spanish ability on the ball to build play, to be that reference point in build-up. He's just recently signed a brand new contract at Real Sociedad. He's already played first team football in their pre-season preparations. So he's definitely one to look out for over the next 18 months or so.
Excellent stuff. Right. Well, that's everything from Scouted's UEFA Youth League 23-24 roundup. Do check out the finals weekend write-up on Scouted Notebook. Please subscribe or consider supporting us, as it helps us to continue bringing original and independent storytelling and analysis on tournaments that often go underreported, like the Youth League. Also, over the course of this season, as Steve mentioned, there were round-by-round write-ups also on available on the Scouted Notebook. So if you'd like to read more on our favourite players and those who stood out to us this season, then get on that. Thanks for listening, and thank you again to our partners, Skill Corner, for supporting the Scouted podcast. That's everything from us, and we'll be back in May for more of the same. Speak soon. Bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up-and-coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.